We're talking just a week after the Stoneman Douglas High School shootings, and the students who survived marched on the state capitol in Tallahassee asking for a ban on assault weapons, and they're taking real action as opposed to grieving. Is this too quickly a time for them to take action and not take enough time to grieve? Because I know you have been thinking about this, and you've written about when it's time to take action to force change.
I think it's very good that they're taking action so quickly. It is important in those very first few days or weeks or months in order to set the tone for what will come next. So the fact that they're already moving forward with this, I think, is a very good sign. There is grieving that goes on. We've seen the ceremonies. We've seen the efforts to try and memorialize the victims. But this is also the time when people can move forward on these issues in a big way. So the fact that there's been this spontaneous effort, I think, is a really good movement forward. And it's not unlike what's been tried before with less success.
When we spoke last year after the shootings in Las Vegas, you brought up one of the points that you phrase othering, where a community tries to distance itself from the perpetrator of the violence because generally they may have come from outside the community. But in this instance, this was someone from within the community, mm-hmm. although separated from the community for a brief period of situation. Is there a difference in how the community can react in that response, because when someone is from their community causing this violence?
I think that the othering occurs in almost all of these situations, but it occurs in different ways. When a member of the community acts like this student did, there's an effort to also kind of distance that person from the community, and that happened here because there were immediately claims that this student was disturbed, mentally ill, obviously showed signs of disturbance and so on. That is to explain it away as somehow as a mental illness is an accident that happened to our community. When people come from outside, it's a little bit easier sometimes to explain it away as someone who is not part of our community, just happened to be here and happened to commit this act of violence. But I think the efforts really are aimed in the same direction. They're to try and separate the victims from the perpetrator. They're trying to say, this isn't one of us. This isn't a member of our community. In some way, they're distancing themselves from the tragedy.
One of the points that you have made in your book is that remembering is better than not remembering. And you address how memorials are popping up more mm-hmm. quickly than they have ever done. There was a series of placards put up in one of the parks near the high school. Presumably, there will be something done down the road. Again, your thoughts on why this is a good thing that people remember.
The whole point of memorials is to keep memory alive. That is, to make sure that something positive comes out of tragedies like this. To simply put up a marker and then forget about the event misses the point of some of these tragedies, that they're ways of promoting change, of ways of making a difference in society. So these days, people oftentimes think of not just permanent memorials on the ground, but living memorials, efforts that will serve as education, that will lobby for change, that might have a political motive in the efforts to change legislation that might affect things in the future. So I think the idea here is to keep memory alive by using these sorts of events as a means of promoting change.
The Gun Violence Archive shows that between 2014 and 2017, there's been a steadily increasing number of gun incidents, 52,000 to more than 61,500, with an average of 333 mass gun violence incidents each year. This year alone, 30 shooting situations that they're described as mass, with Stoneman Douglas being the most deadly. You've been looking at this for quite some time. What are your observations on how the reaction to this has changed so quickly and so recently?
In some ways, I've been very frustrated. I've been following some of these events of mass violence for over 30 years and looking at the repercussions for the communities and the people involved. And up until recently, almost all of these have been ignored or discounted or swept away as an accident, as something that's unusual, that's something that we can put aside and get over. And it's only after some of the recent events, we're thinking of some of the campus tragedies at Virginia Tech and the recent ones in Las Vegas and other school shootings, that people are finally saying that this is enough, that these military weapons don't belong in civilian life, that this sort of issue of mental health and so forth need to be addressed. And I think then we're beginning to see some progress, but as I say, it's been a very slow process for people to gain the attention to these issues.
One of the things that you've done with your research and your writing was look at historic events, and you note that there's often been great distance from the event to when a memorial has been established and observances have really taken root. That's not the case these days because they're so frequent.
Yes, and the other thing is that until the last generation, I would say that it was quite unusual to honor the victims of, say, mass murders or mass violence the way that we do today. For a long time, these events were seen as somewhat shameful or shocking, and the victims were honored, certainly, with memorial services and at the gravesite, but they weren't honored in public. Now I think people are more accepting of the fact that victims, no matter how they happen to be killed, need to be commemorated and they need to be honored, oftentimes at the site of the tragedy. So in some ways, these events are more visible, and maybe that visibility will also spur some action. Rather than sort of explaining these away and hiding the evidence, the fact that people are more willing to acknowledge the violence may be leading toward change that will prevent it in the future.
Now, one of the things that you have done as well is return to some of these memorial sites for anniversary events. What have your observations been as you've looked at these events, particularly those that you wrote about in your book? Mm-hmm.
I find it sometimes very impressive that these memorials are still visited and maintained and honored years and years beyond the event itself. I find it sometimes touching. I'll return to one of these memorials for an event 100 years ago or 50 years ago, and it's very clear that some families or the community itself is honoring the victims. That is, these events send shockwaves through communities that last for years and years. Sometimes people talk now of intergenerational trauma, and I think that occurs in some of these cases where a community is so stricken by these events that people remember for generations, and it affects perceptions of the past and future. And I think that's a very important aspect of these tragedies, and we'll see how that plays out in Florida. What I find hopeful recently is that instead of trying to promote action at the national level, that is, confronting some of these issues through federal laws and through Congress and so on, some of the activity now is being framed as a state issue or local issue. And people are pointing to Connecticut as a model after Newtown and Sandy Hook. The idea that the state needs to step in, it needs to make some rules and regulations that are going to prevent these sorts of violent events, so that maybe the progress is going to happen at a different level. That is, by lobbying or by acting at the state or local level, it may get past some of this real barrier at the national level. And that may be one of the ways forward on this.